Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive, and but we have plenty to get into today. The NBA draft last night, so weird to have that in the middle of November. Anthony Edwards, he goes number one to the Minnesota Timberwolves. James Wiseman, number two to the Golden State Warriors. Love the fit. Number three, LaMelo Ball to the Hornets. The Hornets were in a great spot last night. No matter what they were going to get, one of the top two prospects in my mind. I mean, Wiseman, we only got to see three games. We talked about that on the show yesterday. In my mind, it's Edwards, Ball, either which way you wanted to go. And with Golden State picking at number two, it seemed obvious that the Hornets were going to get one of the two guys that they probably coveted going into the draft to begin with. Top three picks, we'll take a look at that. The Jazz also moving down. I love what the Jazz did, trading Tony Bradley last night, but in the same sense, they have Rudy Gobert's backup, but maybe even a contingency plan. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. Coming up tonight, week 11 of the NFL. And of course, it's right here on KOAL. We get the Cardinals. We have the Seahawks. From a fantasy perspective alone, we should see a ton of offense in this game. A ton of it. Last week, Seattle, a little down. They're not going up against Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey tonight. I truly believe we're going to see some fireworks. I believe the over-under is set at 57, if I'm not mistaken, in Vegas. 57 over and under. It's one of the highest of the season in the NFL. We could get some offensive fireworks. Now, not even talking from a fantasy perspective, just looking at the NFC itself, with how compact this is, the loser of this game will have an uphill battle. Obviously, with the Bears losing to the Minnesota Vikings, there is a cushion. But in the same sense, you got to start paying attention to divisional records, okay? This is why tonight's game is much more important to Seattle than it is Arizona. The NFC West, there's a three-way tie for first place. Cardinals, Rams, Seahawks. Let's say each of these two teams, let's say they all protect home field. Right? Let's say that happens. You look at the way this pans out, and division record is going to decide division champions. The Cardinals already protected home field against the Seahawks. We got to go back a little ways. I believe it was week 7, about a month ago. They pick up a 3-point win. Okay, so the Cardinals right now are unbeaten in division play. They beat the Niners, they beat the Seahawks. Seattle, on the flip side, their lone division win came against San Francisco. They lost to the Rams. If the Seahawks lose tonight's game, not only do they lose the tiebreaker outright with the Cardinals, but they will be behind both the Rams and the Cardinals as far as divisional wins are concerned, and that is huge. And this type of logic, it's going to apply in the AFC North as well. I know that Pittsburgh is rolling away right now at 9-0, and you got Baltimore at 6-3 and Cleveland at 6-3. But divisional records are going to matter in races that are this tight. Golden opportunity tonight for the Cardinals to not deliver a knockout blow to Seattle, but make it very difficult for Seattle to catch them in what's going to be a very tight divisional race. So we'll talk more NFL football a little bit later on in the show. We will also talk more from a fantasy perspective. I mean, again, I think if you have a starter for either squad tonight, you have to start them in your fantasy team. No question. It's going to be that type of game offensively, I would expect. Let's move over to the NBA. About an hour ago, it became official. Gordon Hayward has opted out of his $34 million deal for the upcoming season. He is no longer a member of the Boston Celtics. He is now an unrestricted free agent and can sign anywhere he would like. There have been some rumors about the New York Knicks really pushing hard to grab Gordon Hayward. There was a growing belief that if Hayward was to opt in, Boston would eventually move him to Atlanta. I have to believe that at this point in time, Hayward kind of wants to dictate where he's going to go, and he's viewing a situation that will benefit him a little bit more of a higher priority than money, because there's no way he's going to get $34 million on the open market. There's no way. It's not happening. The Knicks rumor, you know what they say, where there's smoke, there's fire? The Knicks created over $40 million in cap space today by parting ways with six players. They waived Taj Gibson and Elfrid Payton and Wayne Ellington. They declined the $15.7 million team option on Bobby Portis. Gibson was going to make $9.4 million. Payton and Ellington, they were scheduled to make $8 million. The three will each make $1 million in guaranteed money from their deals, despite being waived. And then the Knicks declined a $1.7 million option on Theo Pinson, and they waived Kenny Wooten. So if you think that the New York Knicks are a logical spot for Gordon Hayward to go, and if it's going to cost upwards around $20 million to get him there, which is still a significant pay cut as to what he was making in Boston, the Knicks now have the money. They purged that roster, they created cap space, and so the idea that this is where Gordon Hayward is going to go, I think it's a little bit more realistic. In fact, you look at the money that New York has, where else are you going to spend that? You got a new general manager. I don't think it's a long-term deal, but you have the money to bring Gordon Hayward in right now. And my thought on Gordon Hayward is the same now as it was when he signed the contract with the Boston Celtics. And look, I'm always quick to point out when I'm wrong in the show, so I'm going to point out when I'm right as well. The day Hayward signed that contract with Boston, we had upset Jazz fans. And I said the Jazz would not be able to compete with the Golden State Warriors during that time frame anyway. Let Hayward walk, start rebuilding. And at that point in time, it appeared that nobody was going to be able to touch Golden State or the Western Conference. And the Jazz, they weren't going to be able to compete with Golden State with that Hayward money on the books. That contract would have been a detriment to this Utah Jazz team. This was a team that created a lot of excitement last offseason. They would not have been able to acquire the rights to Mike Conley. They wouldn't have been able to sign Bogdanovich. This team would have looked completely different had they matched and gave Gordon Hayward, I shouldn't even say matched, had Hayward signed that contract that Utah was offering. It was a blessing in disguise for Utah, and it didn't work out for Boston for a number of reasons. Outside of Hayward's ability, injuries definitely played a role. But my mindset then is the same as it is now. If Gordon Hayward is your third best player, you have a legitimate chance to get to the NBA Finals. And I believe that was true last year. Yes, he got hurt going into the playoffs, missed a significant amount of time, but you can make the argument that he was the third or fourth best player on the Boston Celtics, and they were two games away from going to the NBA Finals. If he's your third best player, you have a chance. If the Knicks believe that he is going to be the feature, they're going to be lottery bound once again. Elsewhere in the NBA, Houston Rockets guard Austin Rivers has decided to opt out of his contract and become an unrestricted free agent. 4 years with the Clippers, had short stints with the Wizards and Suns, then he goes to Houston. Had a bench role there, averaged 8 points per game. He was fine there. He was fine. But now you have to wonder if the next stop for Austin Rivers is Philadelphia, because, well, that's where his dad is now. But the Houston Rockets are definitely going to look much different. We're talking about the roster purge in New York. It's fairly similar to what's happening right now in Houston. And once they move on from James Harden, which I believe is inevitable at this point, that roster is going to look totally different next season. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. Again, one game tonight on the marquee slate, Arizona at Seattle. We'll talk about that next segment, actually. We're going to be joined by Joe Bartle of rotowire.com. We'll get the fantasy week off and rolling when we return right here on Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAN. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
So now you open my eyes.
Here comes the quarterback, Burrow, looking for a block, and he got it up on the front by Hopkins into the end zone. Touchdown!
I feel I gotta lose my way.
Coming up tonight, right here on KOAN, We're going to have Thursday night football. Live coverage will begin at 6 p.m. We'll follow that up with kickoff at 6:20. Westwood One's coverage of Thursday night football, and it's an NFC West showdown. We get the Seattle Seahawks and the Arizona Cardinals. Should be fascinating from a fantasy perspective. We'll talk about the big matchups in tonight's contest and more right now with our next guest, Joe Bartle of RotoWire, joins us every Thursday to talk fantasy football. Joe, as always, a pleasure. Thank you again for the time today.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk some fantasy football.
I always look forward to this particular conversation, and as you and I were talking off of the cuff, boy, as far as fantasy numbers are concerned, we could see a lot in tonight's game.
Yeah, the over-under for the Seahawks-Cardinals game is 57. I think it moved down just a half point recently, but for comparison's sake, the over-under, the only one that's close is 56.5 for the Sunday night match between the Chiefs and Raiders. Otherwise, I think there's only two other games that are within 50 points. I mean, this should reinforce what we already know from the fantasy communities, that this Cardinals-Seahawks game is going to have a lot of offense, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, the last time these two played, they combined for, I think, 71 points. It was an overtime victory for the Cardinals. And it took the Cardinals kind of making a pretty dramatic comeback to even get to that point to begin with. So I'm excited, first and foremost, to see what the Seahawks offense can do. And, of course, they're in a bit of a sputter right now. Let Russ Cook move in has been a bit of a disappointment, right? I mean, like, he's had some interceptions, a lot of sacks recently. The running game is a little bit disappointed. Pete Carroll was suggesting early in the week they're going to go back to the running game as a bit of a counter to whatever the struggles we've seen thus far. DK Metcalf in his matchup against the Cardinals this past go-around was completely shut down by Patrick Peterson. That was the Tyler Lockett game where he had 10-plus catches, 200 yards, and 3 touchdowns. It was one of the biggest fantasy performances we've seen from the wide receivers altogether. I think we're still going to have a pretty good game from Russell Wilson. I don't think Tyler Lockett can do nearly as much as we did last time around. If anything, the Cardinals might overreact to that, not Patrick Peterson overreact on covering Lockett, but something to that effect where you see them really trying not to let him beat you. I think there's going to be some more opportunities for Metcalf, and I actually believe we are going to see a bit of a running game attack. Whether it is Carlos Hyde, really that was the last game that Carlos Hyde was the major factor, because it sounds like Chris Carson is not going to play again in tonight's game. So then you have Carlos Hyde, who was, I think it was 15 carries against the Cardinals for about 70 total yards. And I mean, Carlos Hyde is not that great a player. This is sort of what you expect. So Hyde comes in there, gets a few catches, does some things, and you're right back to having him have some fantasy value, maybe open up the door for Russell Wilson. So from the Seahawks' perspective, I think you're going to see a bit more running than we have before. DJ Dallas, Travis Homer maybe gets a little less of the usage, and it's possible Bo Scarborough, who they just called up too, could be a factor. I mean, we've seen Alex Collins do some things as well. This is going to be, I am very interested, as many people are, to see what the Seahawks first and foremost are going to adjust and react to their poor 3 or 4 game stretch now.
Joe, as far as Seattle is concerned, I mean, in tonight's matchup against Arizona, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but we can dive into it. I mean, obviously, you're not going to get the defensive matchup tonight that you got last week against the Rams. You have Aaron Donald, you have Jalen Ramsey, who's been fantastic, two of the best defensive players in the game. And the Cardinals don't necessarily possess that type of firepower on defense. So anyone that was concerned about DK Metcalf, who obviously was a big disappointment last week, Russell Wilson, who obviously, again, a big disappointment, there's obviously some room for optimism going into tonight's game. I don't think there's any question.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no way you can afford to bench a Russell Wilson or DK Metcalf. I think more importantly, people might consider doing that given how he was shut down by Patrick Peterson. That's ridiculous. I mean, you have to assume with a guy as talented as DK Metcalf is that he's going to figure it out or have a better opportunity against some of these better corners in the league. I know Jalen Ramsey also shut him down, but I think that's going to be more of an anomaly than anything else in DK Metcalf's career. So, no, this is going to be a good matchup. And again, I keep stressing it. Vegas says this is 57 points over under right now. 57 points. Again, Chiefs Raiders were 56.5 for Sunday night. Maybe if there is some weather involved, we have a forecast that's suggesting 34% rain here in the RotoWire site. We are great at many, many things. I don't know if weather is like the top priority for us, so I'm not necessarily buying into some rain really affecting the forecast of this contest. But hey, if it does, maybe that's where you see the under fall in line a little bit more. But the Seahawks are going to have to move the ball, and they can move the ball. I think there's going to be a bit more ground game. Russell Wilson is still going to be pretty efficient and effective passer. And on the flip side of things, too, Kyler Murray was absolutely dynamic in last outing against the Seahawks. And I think you're going to see more Kyler Murray in this one, even more passing from Kyler Murray. I think he had close to 60-plus yards rushing. I could see that maybe falling down because I don't know how the Seahawks stop Murray from being a passer, which means DeAndre Hopkins and Christian Kirk and maybe even Larry Fitzgerald are all going to be factors too. I mean, the Seahawks give up the most, I think it's most receiving yards, but it could be fantasy points too, to slot receivers in the NFL, and that's kind of what Larry Fitzgerald does. I'm not, like, eager to go ahead and start Larry Fitzgerald, but you can really make a case for Hopkins, Kirk, and Fitzgerald in just about any starting format this week if you're really desperate for options. I think Kirk and Fitzgerald especially are worthy considerations for this matchup.
Again, Joe Bortle right now of RotoWire.com joining us as we talk fantasy football for Week 11. Joe, let's stick with quarterbacks for a moment. I want to talk Jameis Winston, the situation that's gone down in New Orleans. We have no idea how long Drew Brees is going to be down for. With that being said, those owners that rushed out and they grabbed Jameis Winston, is he an instant play for you?
Yeah, I guess it depends. We talked about this on the Tuesday RotoWire podcast. There's some options that you could use that were available on the free agent wire. For example, Andy Dalton against the Vikings. I think it's actually going to be a sneaky match for Dalton. Mike McCarthy was good at a few things as a Packers coach, and I can say that as a Packers fan through and through. But one of the things he was good at was coming off the bye. I think he's 8-5 during his tenure with the Packers. And if there's one team that like isn't in the NFC North but uniquely knows Mike Zimmer and company, it actually is Mike McCarthy. So I think this could be a sneaky matchup for Andy Dalton to take advantage of that defense and see some things. Obviously, Jameis Winston, we talked about, can be a pretty good fantasy option. The other quarterback I'd consider, though, over him will be Kirk Cousins on the flip side of the thing going against the Dallas defense. I know they improved slightly against the Steelers. I don't think they are any way, shape, or form good yet. And I think Kirk Cousins is going to be throwing touchdowns because they're going to be, I guess I want to say selling out to stop Dalvin Cook. And I think you can't really stop Dalvin Cook. You just have to hope you can contain him. So I think Kirk Cousins is another one I like too. But if Cousins and Dalton were picked up, then yeah, I think Winston makes a lot of sense this week against the Falcons defense. I want to stress this week because I'm not sure they're, I mean, like, obviously the Falcons defense are really bad. They've allowed a lot of points to a lot of different quarterbacks. But I'm not sure I feel comfortable suggesting Winston is going to be an automatic guarantee out there until we really see how the Saints offense operates with him. I'm anticipating Sean Payton maybe dials it down a little bit, make sure Winston has these one reads that he can make pretty efficiently and quickly. All right, great. You can't really mess those things up. It's when Winston was extending the pocket or trying to make plays at the Buccaneers, the turnovers really happen. So just remove that from the equation. One of the ways to remove that from the equation is just not calling that many pass plays, and I think we're going to see that from Winston. Now, he's just going to be effective with those opportunities because the Falcons are so bad defensively, but I'm not sure we're going to really see one way or another what a true Saints offense would look like with Winston, because the Falcons defense is kind of like an anomaly in terms of how bad they are, and I just don't think it's going to share much insight for future weeks. So start them this week, only if a Dalton and Cousins have already been picked up.
Again, Joe Bortle right now, our guest. Joe, let's move over. We'll talk running backs. Who could be on the waiver wire, the free agent line this week that you view as an obvious play?
I don't know if like an obvious play, but Salvin Ahmed, I thought, has looked excellent for the Dolphins thus far. And I watched that Chargers-Dolphins game last week in particular. I'm a Packers fan, but I actually cover the Chargers for the site. So I'm pretty intimately aware of how the defenses the Chargers have struggled or what they're good at and things. And I thought Salvin Ahmed was going to be a bit of an aberration. I didn't think he was going to get much involved. He really ran with purpose and was strong. The only unfortunate part is that Matt Breida seems to have come back now from his injury. He's a full participant in Wednesday's practice. And I thought Matt Breida was the second best running back. Really, I thought he was the best running back before we really emerged and saw what Myles Gaskin could do. So if Matt Breida cuts into Ahmed's work whatsoever, like a 60-40 split for Ahmed over Breida, that's going to be a complete hindrance. And I'm a little bit concerned about that. But Ahmed has just done so darn well that I'm not sure you can really give him that workload. It'll be interesting to see. He's a guy that I'm definitely picking up, not starting. There is a running back in J.D. McKissic who I am starting at this point in full point PPR leagues. He is not going to get 15 targets like we saw last week. It's not going to happen. But Alex Smith is the quarterback for Washington. Means J.D. McKissic is going to have 6 or 7 catches each and every week, and he will do absolutely nothing with them. But if you are in a full point PPR league, you can certainly manage a 6 or 7 catch day and be happy with that as an RB2 or flex. Like, that's a guaranteed 7 points that you can basically count on because Alex Smith is Alex Smith at this point in his career. So that's two of the options, but otherwise it's kind of limited. There might be some consideration about Adrian Peterson now that DeAndre Swift has a concussion and he might not play this week. I have not liked Adrian Peterson at any point during his Lions tenure, but he's probably the better running back to pick up over Kerryon Johnson. It's just a matter of how inefficient the Lions really want to view their offense, because I think you're getting 2 or 3 yards ground and pounding with Adrian Peterson, and that's not really a winning formula to me, but the Lions have been doing it all season long. So kudos to them for being mildly effective in that role. Like a Carlos Hyde, too, who is fully healthy, with Chris Carson turning towards inactive, maybe consider him. But I imagine most people have Hyde picked up. It would be really McKissick and Ahmed that I could see major consideration to start this week.
Joe, we'll end with wide receiver, and I know, again, you being a big Packer guy, Davante Adams, everything good on that end, and with Davante Adams and the injury questions, is Lazard now a play that should be considered at the wide receiver spot?
Yeah, it's interesting. The Packers are notoriously, and certainly the last 2 or 3 years, extra cautious with injuries. We saw earlier this season, in fact, with Davante Adams, he seemed like he was ready to go, and they held him out almost 2 weeks before he brought back. Aaron Jones, the same type of thing. He was injured late in Friday's practice, didn't play for a couple of weeks, and he seemed like he was ready to go based off the press conference that day on the injury. So I get a little bit wary, like when we're talking about teams and injuries, specifically the Packers are always going to lean towards the protective side. However, Adams injured his hamstring in that game. Offense was stalling, and he basically forced his way back onto the field. Was able to make a pretty impressive catch that was called back on holding. It was a great throw by Aaron Rodgers. And then on the next drive, actually did get the touchdown catch on a bad throw by Aaron Rodgers. Made Adams really go up for it. It was an awkward tackle, but he seemed to come up fine and was doing okay. So, like, that reinforces to me that Adams can play. It's just a matter of making sure the Packers' medical staff allows him to. But if he's available against the Colts, he's an automatic start for me. The other guy, like, in this equation is Alan Lazard, who is coming off an injured reserve after, I think, missing the last 6 weeks. It's going to be interesting. I know the Colts' defense is really good. Marquez Valdes-Scantling has been excellent over the past 2 weeks in terms of deep catches for touchdowns. So you would think, man, is there really going to be a third guy that can do well? If you are at all worried about Alan Lazard and considering if he needs to be in your starting lineup, I think he's probably a top 30, top 35 for me, play for me overall. I know the Colts' defense is good, but I think they're a bit overrated given the opposition they've played this year. And the Packers' defense is going to have to move the ball by passing, not running it. So I think Lazard's going to be more of like a 4 for 55 type of day. And you can do a lot worse than 9 points in a full-point PPR league or even like a 5.5. And there's opportunities for touchdown as well given how efficient that offense has been in the red zone.
Again, Joe Bartle, our guest right now. Joe, it's always great to get you on to talk fantasy football. Of course, before I let you go, we got to talk about your busy schedule, everything that you're doing with RotoWire, and where the listeners can find more of you.
Yeah, it was a pretty busy week for me. I always do the Tuesday RotoWire podcast, breaking down free agent pickups and everything else like that, but I actually had to fill in Wednesday. So if you are interested in kind of figuring out people to target in trades, that was the feature of our Wednesday podcast that we did with my co-host Jim Coventry, how to plan for your roster if you are hoping to make the playoffs, you're in contention for the playoffs. We have you covered on that show. I did SiriusXM earlier today as well. We're talking about a few more targets, Ezekiel Elliott, especially Jonathan Taylor as well, that we featured that could be guys for your stretch one that you want to go ahead and acquire. You can see all that on my Twitter account, JB Fantasy Sports. Otherwise, go to rotowire.com/free. You get a 10-day free trial for the site, and there you can see the strength of schedule tool that we added almost recently. It's one of the best features we've had in a long time. It gives you graphs, different numbers to look at to apply the schedules, and it gets broken down by quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end, every position, and discusses the strength of schedule for them the rest of the year. I'm basing most of my rosters around it. It's been an excellent tool for me when trying to plan for the future, and it's a really nice thing to have on top of all the other great stuff that RotoWire provides.
Joe, always a pleasure. Look forward to doing it again next week. Thank you so much for the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Let's take a quick commercial break. More Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we'll move over to the local side of things. We'll be joined by USU Eastern basketball coach Bill Evans when we return.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
talk local basketball. Right now, everything's about the NBA. We had a draft last night, and college hoops going to be starting in about a week. However, we're still a little ways away from junior college basketball. It's a new era for USU Eastern. In fact, they'll be under the direction of new head coach Bill Evans, well-known name in the college basketball world, and now Coach Evans bringing his knowledge and his ability here to USU Eastern, and he's actually joining us over the phone right now. Coach, as always, a pleasure. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
You bet. My pleasure.
Coach, let's start by talking about now being in the month of November. I mean, just going back over the last few years, around this time, we're typically preparing for one of the first home games of the season. That's not the case. We're still a couple of months away from the start of the season. I know there's been one scrimmage so far. So in this extended time off, how have you assessed the way the team has managed to come together and the way things are actually working out?
Oh, I think they've been terrific. We have some really good people in the program, and they've really been working hard and you know, trying to adjust to a new coach and then adjust to the virus that's affecting us all.
There has to be some struggles, Coach, especially when you talk about some of the freshmen that you have coming in. Even when we go back, we look at some of the sophomores. I mean, the last time you and I had a conversation, we talked about Donovan Avila, who we expect to have a very big season. But when you look at the kids that are trying to make the transition, has it been as seamless as possible for them now that school, you know, we're heading into the holiday break, we've had this semester? Has everything worked out well from an academic standpoint?
Oh, yeah. No, all of our guys are doing well academically. They've transitioned well into what needs to happen academically and athletically, both. So, like I said, we have very good people. We don't have any issues with them off the floor, knock on wood. And so they've really done a good job of getting acclimated.
It's great to hear you say that, Coach, because I go back to our first interview a few months ago when you were named head coach and you had mentioned you were going to bring in character kids. And that's always the idea, I know, right out of the gate. But to actually see these kids on campus and seeing them being high-quality character kids, that's different than hoping that they're high-quality kids, right?
Sure. No, I think part of our job is as a coaching staff is, to recruit talented guys, athletically, but we also have to do a good job of evaluating them as people. And you have to be able to talk to former coaches and family members, parents. All those things will, I think, give you an indicator of what kind of person they are.
Speaking of coaches, I know there's two new ones on the staff, Coach. You and I haven't had an opportunity to talk about your coaching staff yet. I had the opportunity to talk to Thomas Salmon not too long ago. I know there's also Easton Ralph. So you now have a complete coaching staff. It's been a while since we've had the men's basketball team with two assistant coaches on the bench. How has that been, and what have you seen from these two assistants as far as their work ethic and knowledge to the program?
Yeah, I think both of them are terrific young guys, and they're hard workers. And I give them some things that I think that we need to do to make sure we do a good job with our players. And they've done a great job of, there's an adjustment for them as well, but they've done a great job of taking, if I can say, the bull by the horns and getting a lot of good things done.
Coach, we'll talk about the way the one scrimmage went. And I know there's not a whole lot of game time to actually talk about, but there were some positives. I know just looking at the box score, what was your assessment from your team as a whole, the program as a whole, after that one scrimmage?
Well, I think anytime you scrimmage, it can be enlightening, and that scrimmage was no different. We weren't very good defensively. We weren't very patient offensively. I think our shot selection wasn't very good. So it was early, and there were a lot of things that scrimmage brought to my attention or our attention. And so we've been addressing, those things since that time. Scrimmages are a test. Sometimes you fail in some areas, and sometimes you succeed in some areas. But we want to make sure that we're succeeding way more than failing, that's for sure.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Bill Evans of the USU Eastern men's basketball team. Coach, as we look ahead, the holiday season is here. It's always an interesting time. Typically, the kids, they're on the road. I mean, if we go back to years past here at USU Eastern, there's road games that are being played during the Thanksgiving break. That's obviously not going to be the case this year. So is there a certain way you approach that as a head coach?
Well, I think that it's been a little bit difficult keeping them on task, you know, without any scrimmage. That's a long time to go without playing somebody different. But that's no one's fault. It's just part of what happened this year. But they've done a really good job, I think, of showing up every day and making the type of effort, you know, that we want them to make. And of course, there's a lot of learning that goes on, you know, with that, you know, with them accepting, you know, some of the things that we're trying to do and translating some of those things into actual playing time.
So is it almost like a well-deserved break for these kids mentally to get to leave for the holiday season?
Yeah, I think so. I think it is. I think it's a good time, and we're taking a little bit more time than some schools are. There's a lot of schools that are doing what we're doing. We're sending our guys home until January 3rd, and there are a lot of other schools that are doing that. Salt Lake's doing that. West Plains is doing that. So there's a couple of people that I know that are doing the same thing. And one of my concerns was to send them home for Thanksgiving, bring them back, and then for some reason we're quarantined again. You know, there's a pretty good expense from, as you know, from flying back and forth, and having to do that on two occasions I thought might not be a good idea. So I decided, along with a lot of other coaches, to let our guys go home until January 3rd.
So what does Coach Evans and his staff do between November 23rd and January 3rd? I mean, what approach do you guys take knowing that the guys aren't here?
Well, we're still going to do a lot of stuff, you know, with new technologies that I don't know anything about other than calling them. But, you know, we're going to be Zooming them. We're going to be sending them, you know, weekly workouts. We're going to be talking to them via Zoom as well. And so that'll, you know, that'll keep them on track, I think.
Yeah, no question. Coach, once the guys return, you mentioned January 3rd. Is there at least a tentative schedule that's been put together in preparation for the season opener, which I believe, if memory serves me right, is January 22nd?
Yeah, we play the 22nd in Twin Falls against Northeastern and California Christian College. So we'll be on the road the first weekend, but you know, that's all part of being a college athlete and college student. You got to be able to you know, adjust to that.
So no scrimmages in between that time. So when these kids actually come back, they step on the court for the first time. That'll be the first time they have played live competition, not their own, outside of that October scrimmage meet.
No, we're going to try to get a couple scrimmages. We have a couple scrimmages in mind in January. We haven't penciled them in yet, but I would think we would try to do one. You know, maybe the 8th or 9th or 11th of January, and then do another one maybe 4 or 5 days after that. And then that next weekend we'll open up. So we're going to try to play a couple scrimmages for sure.
And in all your years of being around college hoops, Coach, scrimmages, I mean, they account for quite a bit, right? Seeing opposite competition and having film that you can dissect on your own squad?
Absolutely. It's very, very important. And at the Division I level, you're only allowed to have a couple of them. But at our level, you can have, with the COVID, you can have five. But, yeah, it's a real important tool in helping us in preparation for real games.
Well, Coach, before I let you go, we can step away from basketball for just a moment. Now that you've been in Price for a little while, is it everything that you thought it was going to be, being the head coach of USU Eastern?
Sure. No, I think it's been a good experience. It's been a good learning experience for me. I really enjoy my team. I don't have guys I got to beg to do things. Again, that's all by design. I just maybe I'm not real good at handling guys that are a little bit, if I can use the word, high maintenance. Maybe they have some issues that have to be addressed, and I'm probably not great at doing that. That's why I spend so much time getting guys that that want to be here, that want to get better, that want to help us do things the right way.
Well, Coach, I definitely do appreciate you taking out the time. I know you have another appointment coming up, so I will let you go. But thank you so much for the conversation today, and I hope we talk again real soon.
Yeah, please do. Call anytime. Thanks. I look forward to meeting the people of more of the people in Price's as time goes on. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Coach. That's Bill Evans, head coach of the USU Eastern men's basketball team, taking out the time to join us right here on Drive Time Sports. We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports on the way when we return.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750 with Jordan Buscarini.
Yeah, running down a dream.
Back to close out this edition of Drive Time Sports. A couple of minutes left on the show. An opportunity to move over and talk about the NBA draft last night. I'll bring in Travis Anderson to do that. Travis, just a couple of minutes left, but we can talk about what the Jazz did last night. Udoka Azubuike, big man from Kansas. That was their first pick. He comes in at number 27. And I think it shocked some people. I mean, really, when you draft a guy like Azubuike, he is on the opposite end of the spectrum from the modern-day big man, and maybe that's why I like it so much. I don't think that it's a poor pick. I know you weren't too high on it when you came into the radio station. I like thinking outside of the box. I think it's a compliment to Rudy Gobert. I think you have a guy that's going to have problems defending an open space, but with his wingspan and his physical ability inside the paint, I don't know that you can have enough big guys like that, even in today's modern league. And when you look at it, when you look at the way, we'll say the Lakers won a championship, look, Dwight Howard doesn't give you much outside of 10 feet, and he might have played himself into a much bigger contract this offseason. So for me, I like it. The Jazz move on from Tony Bradley. Makes a little bit more sense once they traded him to Detroit. They did that minutes after they selected Azubuike. Big 12 player of the year, one of the best players on one of the best teams in the country. I'm all for it with the 27th pick. I don't think you have much to lose.
He's productive around the basket. He's very good, like you said, like Dwight Howard. Focal percentage is going to be high. Just didn't think it was a need for the Jazz, but that's the backup to Rudy Gobert now.
What's a need?
They need wing help. So I thought they should have went and tried to find a wing defender. Somebody could space the floor, spread the floor, and they went big. So
yeah, but then with the 39th pick, they grab Elijah Hughes, and this kid out of Syracuse is someone that can score the basketball. He was the leading scorer in the ACC last year, which is pretty incredible. When you look at the ACC
and that's
incredible.
Yeah.
This kid can score the basketball, right? So he's 6'6". He can play the forward spot. There's some wing help there. I don't know what he's going to give you defensively, but look, if you lose Jordan Clarkson, in my mind, you have someone in Hughes that's probably going to have a role in this league for a very long time. I think it was a good... I think overall, I thought the Jazz did well. The problem with any draft, especially when you're picking late, and this is why I don't value draft picks in the NBA. When I see teams trade 4 or 5 draft picks and they don't have a first rounder, but every other year for like 5 years, I don't even care. Because when you get down to the bottom of it, you're rolling the dice. I mean, a couple of years ago, we were talking about Grayson Allen, remember? Mm-hmm. Is this a smooth pick for the Jazz? When's the last time we talked about Grayson Allen having any sort of impact in the league? So to draft Azubuike when they drafted him, knowing what he can bring to the table, and I believe you have to have a guy like that, and then to grab Hughes, again, physically, is Hughes going to be able to have the success that he had in the NBA, that he had in the ACC? Probably not. But that's okay. You grabbed a guy that is capable of scoring the basketball with the 39th pick. I don't know that Dennis Lindsay could have done any better last night. I really don't.
Yeah, with what was on the board and looking at it at that spot, that's probably the best pick, you know, at 27 and then in the second round, like with that guard. So we'll see what they do because I don't think Jordan Clarkson's coming back. I think somebody's going to pay him a lot of money and I think he's gone.
Possible. Yeah, I mean, we were talking about a guy that might have played himself into a pretty big role. Like, I understand that. And so just looking at the way things panned out for the Jazz, Tony Bradley, look, I'm going to take Udoka Azubuike over Tony Bradley 7 out of 7 times. Every day out of the week and twice on Sunday, I'm taking Azubuike over Tony Bradley. I think they got better in that regard. Tony Bradley's a guy that I've interviewed multiple times. I like the guy. He has peaked. He's peaked. They have a better backup now in Azubuike. So I believe that they did improve last night picking 27th, and ultimately that's all you can ask for, I think, in the NBA draft. And this is, again, why I don't value number one picks as much as many do. I mean, you look at Oklahoma City right now, they're laying on a treasure trove of picks. Well, now you better do something with them, otherwise they do you no good.
Yeah, I'd rather have the proven player, for anytime. Instance. I'd rather have Dennis Schroeder and then the 20th pick. So,
yeah, the Lakers, they ultimately selected Schroeder with the 28th pick in the draft last night.
And if you look at it, Talen Horton-Tucker, who's only 20 years old, if he was in this draft, where would he have gone?
Top 15.
Yeah, so see, they got those two guys, so that's why I don't value draft picks. If I'm like...
As much,
because you're usually your favorite team. If they're winning a lot, they're picking towards the bottom of the draft, later in the draft, and it's hard to hit on guys in later rounds.
It's not the NFL.
No.
It's not the NFL. Bad news for the Golden State Warriors. Klay Thompson has suffered a tear to his right Achilles. Everything seems to be going downhill for Klay Thompson. We can talk about the Warriors situation on the show tomorrow. Travis, we'll end with this. Cardinals, Seahawks, who are you rolling with?
Seattle.
I'm going to take Seattle at home as well. We'll be back again to do it tomorrow. Be safe. We are out.